You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to a new episode of Delirious Nomads, brought to you by Blacklight Media Records, a weekly podcast hosted by yours truly, celebrity chef Chris Santos. I hate calling myself that. And underground metal connoisseur Matt Bacon, who loves being called that. This is your new favorite podcast for all things heavy metal, as well as breakdowns of your favorite combat sports and riffing on some food talk every week with very special guests from across the globe. Hey, welcome back to another very special episode of Delirious Nomads, the Blacklight Media podcast. Today we have the reason behind Delirious Nomads is with us today. One of the reasons, anyway. Good friend of mine. You know him, of course, from Armored Saint and Anthrax. John Bush.
What's up, dude?
do you know my cohort, Matt, here? Have you guys met before?
Yes, we did meet Matt. We did. We met a little while ago, but...
Prior to the show starting, we met.
Yeah,
we did. Okay, got it.
Started chatting about his sweatshirt.
We obviously want to thank you for letting us borrow Delirious Nomad and pluralizing it for this podcast. We really were struggling to come up with a name. And then I have, Tracy Vera has seen, I have right in front of me, you guys can't see it, but I have kind of like a little display of cassette tapes from back in the 80s, and Delirious Nomads is right in front of me the whole time. And I was like, wow, this is a perfect name. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. It's a cool title.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think it works, because we're mostly talking with musicians. I mean, we're talking to some MMA fighters and boxers too, and some chefs here and there. But you know, mostly people that do a lot of traveling and touring and live sort of a counterculture lifestyle. So it's just really a perfect title for us. So thank you very much.
Nomads we are.
So where shall we begin? I mean, I've got some questions about the past, but let's maybe start at the present. I mean, we are recording this in mid-April, about 13 months into the pandemic, which now seems to be, hopefully there's a light at the end of the tunnel. How did the pandemic, affect you and the band, and what's sort of the plan going forward?
Well, in a personal way, the pandemic probably affected me a lot, like it affected a lot of people, and that was to kind of stay hunkered down for at least those first couple months, and which, you know, wasn't the worst thing, because you got to hang out with your family and you got to spend time maybe reacquainting with, you know, members of your family that you sometimes take for granted, or the simple things in life, like just walking the dog. And we got a new dog during that time, which a lot of people did, which was cool. And just connecting again with my wife and my kids, and maybe sometimes those relationships we're really close, actually, but you know, my kids are teenagers now. So they're starting to kind of journey off into their own worlds. And we were fortunate enough to have this happen to kind of bring us all a little closer together, just because you had to. And that was a good thing. In terms of some of the business, for rock and roll, I mean, obviously nobody's played shows, which has been weird, that all this huge collection of musicians probably have a lot in common in the fact that nobody could play. But everybody had different ways to make music, I'm sure, in different capacities. And for Saint, who sometimes actually through our career has had sometimes bad luck, the good thing is this time we actually had some good luck, in the sense that we finished all the recording. So it would be just our luck in the past to just start recording right when the pandemic hit, and then we'd have to kind of, you know, not do it or postpone it, or, you know, I don't know. We were fortunate enough to be completed with the recording. So all we did is handed off the they're not tapes any longer, but they handed off the recordings to be mixed, and that was it. We were fortunate enough to just go right into that mode, and that was awesome. So we were lucky enough to not postpone our record, and we always strove to have like an October release of 2020, and we still were able to achieve that. So that part was good. Still haven't played, did a live stream. That was cool. It was fun. It was cool for the fans, kind of like a glorified rehearsal, a little bit of a like a combination of glorified rehearsal and making a video. So it was weird playing to the camera.
It's funny, because Joey Vera said the exact same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we made the most of it and we were happy that fans were, you know, who came to watch it did. And we played some new tunes, which you always want to do when you make a new record. Of course, you want to play new material. And we did that the one time. I did some other kind of weird things. You mentioned Charlie was on your show and I did this quick little kind of combo song with him of an old Anthrax song, Package Rebellion, that was on Sound of White Noise. Just him and I kind of doing it, you know, and it was really cool, fun little project. It was really just like a verse and a chorus and of the song, maybe like 2 minutes in or something, 3 minutes in of that song. But it was fun because we had never really played that song when I was in the band. And so it was fun. And it was just very spontaneous and organic. So things like that happened. And, you know, we carry on. And now we see that in the LA Times just yesterday, apparently they listed a bunch of concerts for the summer. So I guess people are getting pretty optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing that we're opening up in here in LA for everything June 15th. Is what I read.
Great.
It's going to be a bit crazy. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I definitely want to. I want to open everything back up, including my restaurants, 100%. I want to go to as many shows as possible. I miss concerts so much, but I'm worried that there's a tiny part of me that's worried that we're moving a little too quickly. Like, I don't know if you guys know the EDC festival in Vegas, which is the biggest, you know, electronic dance music festival. They're opening, they decided they're going for it, and they're doing it in May with, you know, full capacity. That's 100,000 people a day with really not many just restrictions. I know the Danny Wimmer festivals are happening. He's going to do one in September and one in, I think, October or November, but that feels better to me than like right away. I don't know. But so you never got to tour on the record. Is that the plan? Is that, are you guys going to hit the road as soon as possible? Or are you going to, I guess I don't even really understand, Matt, maybe you could chime in here, but you know, it's going to be this unprecedented time where every band that wants to get on the road, there's going to be a glut. There's going to be no dates for bands, especially like on the club circuits.
Well, no doubt about that. It will be super busy out there for groups to want to go on tour and play, no doubt about it. But I think people are just excited to get back in and start playing and touring and doing shows. Hopefully we can do that with some logic behind it and a little bit of care. You know, we don't want to just, like you said, go right in all guns blazing and just and you know, nobody wear a mask and everybody just not care and take that risk. So if we could do things in a kind of a slow fashion but still do it, and then time will tell what we can do with that, and did that work and was that effective or was that a bad idea. We're not going to really know until actually we probably start having some of these shows and some of these concerts and some of these big concerts. It's time will tell, I think. So I'm optimistic. I mean, what else are we going to do? I mean, we can't live in complete fear for the next couple of years because it will suck and we'll all be unhappy. And I just don't think society can take it. But that being said, be smart. You know, there's a balance there. And I think if we can try to do that, we'll have more success.
Are you guys going to tour then as soon as you can, I guess is the question.
Well, we got an offer to do a tour in August and it just didn't work out for other reasons other than the pandemic. But so it looks like we might do a handful of shows in December with that same artist. I can't reveal it yet, but that's the plan, is to do like, you know, at least 5 or 6 shows. And I think they're still going to go on a tour, this artist and a support act. And they're striving for August through like late September, early October. So that's like a 5-week tour for just that art, for those two groups. And, you know, I mean, we'll see if it happens. I saw stuff, all these shows are planned for this summer, whether it's, you know, Deftones, Motley Crue and Def Leppard, various bands that are planning. I saw it in the LA Times yesterday for concerts that are promoting this summer. So somebody thinks that it's going to happen. Now time will tell, I guess, if it really will.
Yeah, I mean, it does look, I think I read today 66 million people have been vaccinated, which is more than they actually expected at this point in time. So, I mean, there's good news there. I get it, man. Like, you know, we're opening the restaurants, we're getting every weekend, we're seeing, you know, we're busier and busier and it's good. But we're also noticing behavior that's a little bit alarming. Like people are kind of getting a little too relaxed, I think, in the moment and forgetting to wear the mask. And
trying to be possible, you know, just try to be courteous, you know, and try to be just use some common sense. I think if you can combine those two things, again, time will tell. We'll see how we are in a couple months from now. And if stuff goes really south, which hopefully it won't, then it'll be like, we screwed up. We went too soon. Hopefully not.
All right, well, moving on. So you have, in my opinion, one of the more or most distinctive voices in metal. You just do. Your voice is different than everyone else's. And I know you started kind of young, but when did you know you had, you know, it, that you had something unique going on with your voice?
A couple of years ago. I think that it takes some time to, you know, really develop your own unique trip and sound. For me, I think it, you know, I really kind of came into my own, actually, believe it or not, I think the last 10, 15 years. I really, truly believe that. But because my voice is very different than what it was when I was like in my early 20s in the early stages of Armored Saint. You know, it's funny because I'll read reviews and people go, he sounds the same. And I'm like, well, I really don't sound the same, actually. Because if you listen to like something off Punching the Sky, and then you could listen from Delirious Nomad, my voice does sound different. But I think it's stronger and more powerful and warmer now than it was then. I just think I sounded like a guy who was like 21 years old, which is what I was. I always say that I think that when it comes to singing, the most important thing to be a great rock singer or pop singer or blues or any, you know, of the genres, other than maybe it's like some opera singer or something where technique and everything is really imperative. I think it's just more about uniqueness and your own vibe and your own sound and style. You know, I remember taking lessons probably in my late teens from this one voice teacher, and she was a woman, and we were talking about artists and stuff. And then she said something like, oh, well, Rod Stewart, you know, he's terrible. He's a terrible singer. You know, and I was like, what? Rod Stewart, like he's like one of the most unique sounding voices in rock and roll of all time. So you may not like his technique and you may think his technique isn't proper, but God, he's Rod Stewart. So right. You know, I was very offended. And at that time, I don't think I went back to her after that. And that was a stupid philosophy because I'm not looking to be an opera singer. I'm looking to be a rock and roll singer, and uniqueness is everything. So like I say, Lemmy is an amazing singer. You know, technically, was he? No, but his voice is, you hear it, you know it. And yeah. I think that's the most important thing. So that's what I always kind of try to strive for, is just having my own sound. And of course, improving technique and improving on, you know, tuning, which is, can be a struggle for me sometimes. And certainly taking care of my voice is always a big challenge. You know, those are the things that I think are most important when you're a rock singer.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask is like, what specific actions have you taken in the last 10 to 15 years so that now your voice is, in your eyes, the best it's ever been?
Well, you know, certainly the reduction of the amount of extracurricular activities was probably a big part of it. And, you know, I do like to drink and I still drink. I don't probably drink as I used to when I was in my 20s or 30s. But I do like to drink and I still do. But I minimize that on the road for sure. Anything else that wasn't drinking that could alter yourself, I tried to eliminate that from my life a while ago. And, you know, cause like cocaine isn't good for a voice. It's just not going to be good for singing.
It's not good for anything really.
Right. It probably isn't. It really isn't in retrospect. You know, it's like things like that, you know, I also have to watch my diet, which is a drag because I love to eat, as Chris knows, because I'm a pig and I pigged out at his restaurant and at many restaurants and at home. You know, but I think that watching, you know, I have a little trouble sometimes with acid reflux and a little bit of that. I have my own kind of homeopathic thing that I take now that's, I don't want to be on Zantac for 20 years. I just don't think it's good for you. But I have my own kind of new thing that I've started a couple of years ago that's been really, really helpful. And, you know, it's a combination of aloe vera juice and some apple cider vinegar pills and papaya enzymes. And it's worked like a charm for me. And that's been great because I did have some problems with that. And then that's really bad for your voice. I mean, we did the classic Anthrax Pantera tour of like 97, 98. When we went out for like an 8-week run with those guys. And it was one of the funnest tours I've ever done, just because we were insane and every day. And when you're on tour with Pantera, it's impossible that you are not going to drink it's just forbidden, obviously. So you just kind of say, okay. And, but you know, drinking that amount of whiskey and then ending the shows, with like either Taco Bell right before bed or, you know, whatever fast food chain that they ordered a slew of food from that, you know, is for after show food that Anthrax actually participated in eating too. And then going right to sleep, not good for the voice. So as much as it was by one of my most memorable tours in my life, as far as having fun, I probably sounded like crap most of it. So, but I had a great time and they were great shows. So those are the kind of things that, you know, it's funny, like singers have this reputation of being like the party guy and this and that. But really, I would say that if you talk to most singers, most of them don't do that because they kind of have to take care of themselves. Not that I always did.
Interesting on the singing thing. My wife is actually a trained opera singer. She's got a degree in opera. She's been the halftime show at an NBA playoff game. Like, she's a legit opera singer, but she's primarily an actress. But because she puts down, you know, on her resume or whatever that she's an opera singer, she sometimes gets auditions to just sing like rock or, you know, and she can't do it. She can sing opera, but she can't sing anything else. It's really bizarre.
Right. Well, I would be curious about what she says about her voice. You know, those are the kind of things I find interesting as well, is how she takes care of herself and what she has to do. And so, I mean, look, I've always got a scratchy voice. It's just a raspy thing. And that's kind of how I sing. So I could get away with being a little raspier than I normally am if I'm on the road, if I do a show. Again, for me, I never look for perfection when it comes to making music, rock and roll, you know, heavy metal, singing, writing songs, recording songs. To me, I think imperfectionism is cool. Imperfection, you know, the best Zeppelin records, Sabbath records, they were perfect, and there's plenty of mistakes galore, and it's just the organic beauty of bands playing, and mistakes are part of it, and I actually welcome it. I really do, especially these days when everything's Pro Tools and very specific, and you can fix every mistake. I don't want that. I mean, I don't want to go out there and sound like crap, let's face it, but couple bad notes here, a couple flubs there. I don't know. To me, that makes it feel real. And I
agree. Totally. You know, under the category of, excuse me if you've had this question tossed to you before, but you know, so you joined Anthrax in what, 92?
92. Yeah. May.
I remember seeing you guys at CBGB's. It must've been 93, I think, which is incredible. But how did did your approach to singing change going from Armored Saint to Anthrax?
I think my voice was just naturally kind of changing from the 80s into the 90s. It was just kind of happening kind of naturally as the sound of my voice, probably the approach to singing, the style of singing, not as high, kind of trying to find this mid-range register that I think is a little warmer, a little more comfortable to sing in. You know, albums like Raising Fear, even Symbol of Salvation, I sang high. Raising Fear in particular for Armored Saint, I listen back on that and go, what was I doing? Like, it's like I was taking a hit of healing. Okay, let's sing a win. It was so high and like hard to reproduce now in certain songs. But again, I sing that stuff a little lower and I think it just sounds better in all honesty. But yeah, I think that was just, like I said, a natural kind of progression. And I always say that playing with the guys in Anthrax, it brought out a different sound and style to me. You know, playing with Scott and Frankie and Charlie, it just kind of, it made me feel and sound differently because I was playing with these other people. So I think that was the most important thing. So that kind of just, it kind of catapulted me into a different mentality of singing. And then I probably continued that on going back into Saint and kind of utilized that same kind of mentality as I did in Anthrax and probably never returned because of course I wasn't, like I said, if you listen to early Armored Saint records, I did have a much higher voice than I do over the last 20 years, 30 years even. So, and it feels better.
So tied into that, because you ended up, I was researching you to prepare for this, and I realized my introduction to your voice was actually through some Burger King commercials in like 2007.
Yeah. Oh, there was talking. Yes.
Yeah, but like I saw the description of the commercial. I was like, oh shit, I remember that.
Yeah, I was like the tag voice for Burger King for about 3 years.
That's crazy.
Amazing. It was an amazing time, an amazing run, and very lucrative and fruitful and a lot of fun. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, I'll throw a shout out to a friend of mine. Her name was Jackie Martinosky. She was like the first person who became my voiceover agent. Well, this was all motivated by my wife. Let me say that for starters. You know, Tori is, I would talk to her and say, maybe I could get into this. And Tori's a casting director. That's what my wife does. So it was easy for her to kind of say, okay, let me try to help you with this. So, cause I thought, hey, let me try to, I use my voice. Let's try to use it this way if I can. And she helped me. And then I ended up meeting this girl, Jackie, who is an agent and also a huge metal fan. So she's like, of course I want John Bush. Let's go. So she did help. She helped me and she kind of thrust me into, becoming a voiceover actor and trying. And then I was lucky enough after a couple of years to get that job. And it was, when you get a job like that, you know, the agent at the time, that it was a different agent, but she basically said, you do realize that this is kind of like hitting the lottery. Like nobody, not everybody gets this. And I was like, okay, you know, and there's some truth to that, because when you become like the voice of a campaign, and then if it goes for a couple of years, or if you're like somebody like Billy Vera, who's a musician, Billy Vera and the Beaters, if you remember that artist from, I think the 80s, actually, he's got that voice. He was actually the original voice of Burger King, and I ended up replacing him.
Wait.
And Billy Vera is still the voice of AMPM. AMPM, too much good stuff. That's him. What's he got that character now in AMPM? What's his name? He's like, he has all the stuff on him, hot dogs, all these different things. And it's become part of their campaign. Anyway, I think he's the voice of that. He might not be, but he's definitely the voice of too much good stuff. And he's a rad voiceover actor and does very well. And he's had that campaign for years. You know, so when you get it, you're really happy. And then when it ends, you're pretty bummed, but you're grateful that you had the time that you did. But yeah, that was great. I made a ton of commercials. I made a ton of commercials that were, on TV. And then I did even way more on radio, and it was a lot of fun. It's a competitive business. I haven't had that success since then, unfortunately, but now people are doing voiceovers, big time actors. And so now you're not just competing with the voiceover guys in the world. You're competing with, you know, Jeff Bridges and Robert Downey Jr. And it's like, well, what am I going to do? John Bush or Robert Downey?
Right.
So my question was like, learning to use your voice in that way, right? More expressively as a voiceover actor. Did that end up impacting the music?
The key to voiceover for me was I wanted to just keep my style of who I was as kind of, you know, street kind of rock guy. And I think that's important. Like when I get auditions for other things and I say, well, that's just not me, you know, that you got to know you're an actor. I'm this dude. I'm this kind of the guy I'm talking right now. That's me as a voiceover guy. So I'd like to be diverse enough to do all these things and sound like, you know, a Juilliard, you know, perfectly with perfect diction, British actor, but I can't do it. I just, you know, it's just, I can't pull it off, but I can pull that off. But the funny thing is when you're doing voiceover, diction is very, very important. Obviously you can't just flub words. When you're a singer, you know, sometimes I don't even know if I say words because I'm just singing. And I think that actually sometimes ended up hurting me as a voiceover actor, because my rock and roll world is one where I don't have to worry about diction sometimes. And even when we're recording Joey, you know, this last record, Joey would say, what is that word? It's not, I can't understand what you're saying, what word that is. And then I would say, well, you can't understand every word Robert Plant said either. So like, it doesn't really completely matter, but okay, let me try to say it a little bit cleaner. And you know, so probably somehow, some way it did. But again, I think that when it comes to music, I think you can certainly be more loose.
Well, how many different spots did you do for Burger King?
I probably did, like, I'd say in the course of the time, I'd say probably 200 to 400.
Really?
With radio and television, yeah. I probably did like 50 TV spots and like 150, 200 radio spots.
Did you ever get like recognized in public because of your voice?
Well, I mean, it was a time that I had left Anthrax, and Armored Saint wasn't quite kind of really having this rebirth again yet. So that was one of the, I mean, it was perfect timing, because when I left Anthrax and the talk was about doing the reunion, my daughter was like a few months old, my first daughter, and my one and only daughter, but I have two kids, but she was like 4 months old, and the Anthrax guys, I think they wanted to do this reunion, and I was like, yeah, you know, do it, you know, go ahead, you know, I don't even mean that negatively, just do it. I have a newborn kid. And then this other thing was starting to develop for me shortly thereafter. So I embraced it, and I said, well, let me do this, you know, this is rolling here, this voiceover thing. So I'll do that. And, you know, with all due respect, I mean, no disrespect to the music business, but I'll just be honest. I mean, I made way more money in the voiceover world than I ever did in acting. I mean, in music, not ever. Not even, it didn't even come close, actually. So it was easy for me to say, I'm into this. This is doing great. I go to the studio, work for like an hour, do like three radio commercials, and then, you know, I'm done for the day. And then, wow, look at the check. It's awesome. So, you know, it was easy to make that transition when it came to nothing really happening in music. Of course, I didn't want to stop making music. Music's everything for me. But it was easy to say, well, I'll kind of do this for a while because this is happening. So
I do understand why people want to do voiceover work and acting work. I was in a movie with Will Smith. I was on camera for about 6 seconds. You can barely even see me. You hear my voice say one thing. And 21 years later, I'm still getting residual checks. They're not very big anymore, but it's just amazing.
Well, it's funny, you know, this is the place the people can't see, but you guys can, but this is a studio that, my wife and I have, that's our casting studio, and I work with her and another casting director, and we do commercials and casting them, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great, I love acting. Acting is an incredible, art, and I don't necessarily want to be an actor, because although voiceover is acting, of course it is, but I don't really want to go on camera. Sometimes I will, because I'm here, and they'll be like, you could do this, and I was like, okay, I'll do it, and then I'll audition, and I've never really gotten any jobs that way, but I do love it. And I do respect the actors, because it's really hard, man. You have to deal with a lot of rejection. You got to have Teflon, just like musicians do. There's a lot of parallels, and you got to be tough, and you got to just keep on hammering. And, you know, I respect these people because they do that. And, you know, I love, the trait of acting, and you know, I love movies and TV and everything. It's all great. But it's a lot of feast or famine. It's a lot of like the music business. You know, if you make it, you're going to make a boatload of money. And if you don't, there's this middle ground that's just like, you just try to above water. And I see that for a lot of actors. I see that a lot of musicians, including myself. And you know, I always say Armored Saint's never been this big cash cow. That's why I always say we do it for the love of it, because we really do, because we don't make that much money. We try to do okay, and we try to not lose money. But you know, the fact is that we've never been this big giant monstrosity of money. And even when I was in Anthrax, you know, I did pretty well, and I had a nice car and this and that, but it was actually the beginning of the decline for Anthrax. The 90s were, it's just a fact. And, you know, for me, it was like, I was still doing way better than I ever did in Saint financially. So it was easy. But for like those guys, they struggled with it actually. It's like, oh no, we're playing where we used to play there, and now we're playing here. And I was like, this is great. Well, I used to play there, and now I'm playing here. So, you know, it's, again, it's all perspective, but, you know, all of that stuff's just a lot of fun, and you got to just keep kind of level-headed. And I don't know, for me, it's all this stuff, music, voiceover, whatever it is, you want to love it. You know, that's the important thing, because money, you just don't know. You just don't know.
It's funny. I mean, you're talking, and I'm listening. And actually, have you met Natalie, my wife? I don't know if you've met her at the restaurant.
I don't know if I have, actually. Don't know.
But I mean, she's done over 60 commercials, and she was like the Act mouthwash girl for a couple of, like 5 years or whatever. But she's done about 50 or 60 commercials. But yeah, for everything she books, there's at least 10 or 15 things that she goes out for that she doesn't get booked, if not more. So yeah, I totally get that. Going back a little bit, kind of all over the place, but kind of going back, I don't know the story behind this, but how I should know the story behind this, but I know. When you actually joined Anthrax, how did that come to be? Were you still active with Armored Saint, or were you not active with Army Team? How did the, and how did they, how'd you become the singer of Anthrax is basically what I'm asking.
Well, the story is, it's kind of a funny story, because one other association I have in my music career is that I was asked to join Metallica back in the day. I don't know if you guys know that, but every year, every new record, everything that happens new in my life, this gets brought back up because it is was a fact and back in the day that, you know, when Metallica, before they made Kill 'Em All, they were looking to maybe get a lead singer. And so Armored Saint was kind of happening at the time, and Metallica knew us. And so they asked me, and I said no, and mainly because Armored Saint was doing great. Me and the Saint guys were really, close guys. We had been childhood friends, some of us, and we just were doing well. So I was like, well, why am I going to quit my band that's doing good to go join that band? I love Metallica, but I'm happy here. So it was easy for me to make that decision. But now I got to live with it for the rest of my life. And then some, but you're the guy that didn't join Metallica. What an idiot. It's kind of, but I always say that I don't need that kind of pressure. I would have changed maybe heavy metal because I never expect, James Hetfield was the only guy to should be, fronting Metallica and singing for Metallica songs. And that's that. And that was fate. But the irony is that when that was kind of happening, I was getting a call from John Cazula, who's at the time was Metallica's manager and eventually became Anthrax's manager, ran Megaforce Records, was a happening guy in the independent metal world. And he was a manager, and he would call me, and then, we'd talk, and then that kind of, didn't happen. So it petered out, and I kind of lost contact with him. And then he became Anthrax's manager, and he had a lot of success with Anthrax. And then like 10 years later, give or take whenever it was, I had a message on my, I was a driver. I used to drive and deliver packages in my car. It was great. It was a great, one of my most fun jobs, because I actually wrote a lot of lyrics when I did that job, because I was in my car listening to songs I were working on. I'd pull over, write some lyrics, continue, drive, deliver a package, put my hair in a ponytail because you had to look presentable, and then go in. That's when I had hair. And then, I go back in. I wrote almost all Symbol of Salvation. I wrote the lyrics on that record, a lot of them at least, doing that job, being a delivery person. So I came home from my job, and there was an answering machine message. I pushed it, and it was John Zazula's office calling. I have something I want to talk to you about. And of course, I had just heard that Joey left Anthrax, Joey Belladonna, shortly before that. And so I was like, huh. I wonder what this is about. Because, literally, we hadn't talked in 10 years, and I knew that he was Anthrax's manager. And so then I call him, and he goes, well, guess what? I'm calling you about the same thing. And I was like, wow, that's funny. So then I said, okay, well, eventually what we decided is that we should probably, really officially meet, because I kind of knew those guys, but I really didn't. I think I knew Scott kind of we were acquaintances more than anything. And the other guys I really didn't know, our paths had crossed through the years in metal, of course, but not really too often. And so I said, well, we should probably meet. And then we met, and then we jammed, and it did feel good. And it did feel, it sounded cool. There's this crazy undying loyalty to the Saint guys and Armored Saint that is, I don't know, it's probably dysfunctional, but it still exists. And it was hard to just say I'm leaving, especially after we made Symbol of Salvation, which was a heart-wrenching experience, because we dealt with Dave Pritchard, who died during the period of time when we were writing songs, and then we made the album, didn't think we were going to make it, went on the road, the tour was pretty rough, and then, we were going through this kind of just probably a big exhale, a large sigh at the time of everything that we experienced. So then that came along, and I just felt like, how am I going to abandon these guys? But as time went on, it became more logical that this was the right thing to do for my life at that time. And I think the important thing was to make sure that we could work together, because I really wanted to still write some lyrics and, be a part of the writing process. So we got together, and Armored Saint did a show in Hawaii playing with Overkill in Honolulu. And after that show, I was going to fly home to LA and then go directly to New York to go work with Anthrax. And I told the guys on the flight home, I'm like, look, here's what's happening. I'm doing this. I'm going to New York. And if it goes well, we could work together, and it feels like we have some vibe. I'm probably going to leave the band. But the only guy I didn't tell was Gonzo, because Gonzo had stayed in Hawaii for a couple of days with the girl that he was dating at the time. And so I didn't want to go, hey, dude, here's what's happening. I'm doing this. Enjoy the rest of your trip in Hawaii. Don't worry about the future. I thought that was like, really would have been horrible. So I didn't tell him. Of course, he found out by Phil's brother, understandably. And so he was extremely pissed at me and really pissed for a while about that. But I think I did what I thought was the right thing at the time, but maybe it didn't seem like it. So in any case, I went to New York and started working, writing. I think Only was the first song we maybe worked on, and we probably finished it in like a couple hours. And so once we did that, it was like, whoa. And to this day, that's probably the most popular song of my era, and Anthrax, and a great song. And it was pretty obvious that there was a vibe between us. So then it was like, okay.
One of our bands on Blacklight Media just covered Only.
That's right. You said it. That was really cool.
And the response has been incredibly positive. Like,
awesome. That's great.
Such a great song. Charlie was really pumped about it. He loves that song. We want to wrap this up because we don't want to keep you all afternoon. The last two things I would ask would be, you know, what's next for Armored Saint and John Bush? But also, you know, could you have imagined when you were, you know, when you first started playing with, you know, those guys in high school, that you'd be sitting here in 2021 at the tail end of the pandemic, answering a question about what's next for Armored Saint?
Huh. That's a great way of putting it. You know, I think that one thing that we had, one of the ambitions we had as kids and when we really started to take the band seriously in the early 80s, I think we had this objective that we wanted to have this longevity of, like, say, we want to be around for many, many years, like the Stones and the Who, which is so weird because they're still doing it, right? Yeah. The same. But like, that was our ambition then, is to be like those kind of bands, right? Judas Priest or whatever, all the bands that we love, Sabbath, you know, name it. Which, again, all these people are still playing, which is insane. But yeah, that was the goal, is to really have this longevity and to be around for a long time. Because you can't really determine the successes financially or record sales. You just don't know. A lot of it's out of your hands. But you can determine your own length of time and how long you do it. And you have to have a lot of persistence, and you just have to hang in there, because it's gonna challenge you. So. I think from that standpoint, I'm really proud of myself. I'm really proud of the guys in Saint, for just still being here and still doing it and really making, our last record. This isn't me saying, it's like the critical acclaim was through the roof. And when people are saying this is maybe the best record you ever made, almost 40 years later, those are pretty awesome accolades. So I'm really proud of this for that. You know, that's just something that I think is, everybody would strive to have. You know, of course we want more money. Of course, I want a bigger bank account. Yeah, who doesn't? You know what I mean? Like, most gnarly punk rocker wants money. Yeah, and if he says no, he's a liar. So we all want money to some degree, but you also want to do it on your terms and have it done with your own integrity. And I think that's the most important thing. So, and we've done that. So, we'll hopefully do some dates next year, or maybe at the end of this year, and play some shows with our, with this new record that, well, it's not going to be, it came out in October, so it's not so new anymore, but it's still the last thing we did, and we haven't played material from it on a legitimate run. So I think that's the real big goal. Plus, we're doing the Symbol of Salvation live DVD that comes out in, I think, this October, of shows that we did when we did our record in its entirety. And that was back in 18 or 19 now, I can't recall, 18. And that was really amazing. And there's some really cool stuff in association with that, because it's the songs, obviously, the whole record and us playing it live. And then there's some good banter of storytelling that and raps. And as you can tell, I have to talk sometimes. But it's fun. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, I'm so bummed I missed that tour. I kept trying to make it and I kept missing it. So I'm definitely looking forward to that coming out.
Well, I mean, once the record comes out, there's no reason why we can't, can go back out and do some more dates doing that. I don't know about a whole tour, but it will give us a reason to say, hey, we can do this again, and it would be fun.
You know, I'm available to join for a week leg, and I'll bring a little barbecue grill, and we can have some fun in the parking lot or backstage.
You do. I mean, we would be so excited if you did that, and you have an open invitation at any time we're on the road to come out and just hang out.
Love it. I'm going to take you up on that. We will let you go. What a great conversation with John Bush.
Thank you very much, guys, for having me on. And of course, the best of luck with all your endeavors, of course, but in particular this one, because this is new. So that's awesome.
Thank you so much. And I will see you at the restaurants very soon.
All right. Great. Thank you, guys.
All right. So that was awesome. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening to Delirious Nomads, sponsored by Blacklight Media. We will be coming back at you next week with another awesome guest. Be sure to follow Blacklight Media on socials for new music and more. And above all, keep it heavy.
It is now 2024, and the choice is up to you. Do you listen to good podcasts? Or do you listen to bad ones? Well, we've got a suggestion for you. How about you listen to a good podcast for the first time in your miserable life? I can think of one. Overnight Drive. Going strong. 11 years now. The podcast about nothing. Your favorite podcast's favorite podcast. Do you enjoy nothing? So do we. Why don't you come over and check it out and stop listening to other podcasts? Thank you.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.